You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on the occupied lands of the Anishinaabe and Nihiyawak peoples, the historical territories of the Nakota and the homeland of the Red River Métis. My name's Michael Welch, and you're listening to a special series of vintage CKUW spoken word programming, which has aired on this, your campus community radio station, over the last 20 years. This week, we will hear audio from an award-winning weekly radio drama which aired Monday afternoons starting in the spring of 2008. The setting was Winnipeg's West End neighborhood, the characters drawn from the diverse dwellers of this urban locale. For the next hour, we'll revisit the community members hovering around a fictional retail outlet known as the Monarch's Convenience Store.
You got your snack. She's got your treat, and she's the first one that you'll meet. The Monarch's Convenience Store. She's got the space for you, and you can go and meet your pal. His Monarch's Convenience has got it all, and Monarch's Convenience, it's here to stay. It's so well stocked, no need to stray. He's open for you and all your friends indeed.
It's been 10 years since At the Monarch's Convenience aired its final episode. Over the course of its 40-week run, people in the neighborhood, both theater students and regular community members like myself, had a stab at creating our own characters and crafting the situations in which they would find themselves as they interacted with this local business and its irascible owner, Rick Blaine. Some of us old cast members had a bit of a reunion in the CKUW station recently. We sat down in the middle studio and chatted a little about the origins of the show, how each of us got involved, and specific show moments that stood out and haunt us still
so
a decade
me
later.
Is, we've got to my right Jason Hooper, who is I guess one of the main instigator behind this project.
Creator. I guess I hold that title, yep, main instigator.
Okay, and I also have two of the cast members. I was a cast member myself. Sarah Aronson.
Yes. Hi, I'm happy to be here to reminisce.
Yeah. And Kathy Herbert.
Hello.
Okay, so it's great to have you all here. It's been 10 years since that play came to a close, but we did it for about a year. Jason, do you want to maybe start by talking about how this came together, where you got the idea and how you turned it into this?
Well, at the time, that was I was pursuing a playwriting degree here at the university, and I had been attending National Radio Drama School. National Audio Drama Festival in West Plains, Missouri for a couple of years, and coming back, just being inspired by meeting all kinds of radio professionals and audio drama professionals, and it seemed like, well, let's try and pursue this. And with the support of the station and Rob Schmidt, I went and applied for some grants to do this, and they gave me some grants, and it tied in with both what I was interested in and what I was studying, and so it really just kind of came together that way.
Mm-hmm. And it was a community engagement ploy.
Yeah, it was a community engagement project. So the idea was that we would recruit from the community in the university and around the university and create an opportunity for people to create a story set in the west end of Winnipeg and write it and perform it.
Yeah, okay. And, of course, this is all revolving around this convenience store in the West End.
Yeah, so that was one of the tricky things when we started actually meeting with people and how was this going to work. And it seemed, at the time, the best way to kind of tie it all together would be to have a central hub, and came up with the idea of a convenience store in the neighborhood that became a kind of headquarters, gossip, a Cheers kind of environment where everybody knows everybody else and they can come in and tell the story of their lives and the things that they're dealing with in an environment that would also prompt other storylines and was a way to introduce new characters as new people joined the program.
Yeah. So there was an initial meeting, correct?
Yeah, we had a couple of initial meetings, and they were quite interesting a lot of the time. We would have a couple of people who showed up, and they didn't want to perform or write. They wanted to provide ideas, and that was not in keeping with the spirit of the project. So really trying to balance that as well as everyone else. I was really new to the whole, everything about it was new to me. And so navigating all of that and everyone's different expectations and trying to keep it all on track was made for some interesting days.
My name's Rick. I've been here almost 10 years. Seemed like a good idea at the time to buy it. Some days, though, I don't know. You know, I was going to change the name. It's going to change a lot of things. But you know how people get? They get used to seeing something around. They don't want to see it change at all, not even for the better. I once changed the flavor of slushies. 2 days later, I got a petition. 50 kids had signed it. You go inside, right? Just inside the door, I've got some tables and chairs set up. They were here when I bought the place. I took them out. Oh, brother. The babas come in for their coffee and newspaper. Man, I thought I'd never hear the end of it. They need a place to sit and gossip. Easier to put them back than to keep fighting them. You ever see a baba with her back? With her back up? I don't recommend it. Oh, this place. You know, there's like thousands of people in these few blocks. Sometimes it feels like a small town. Everybody knows everybody else. You see the same faces over and over again. It's a different feeling from a small town, because for the most part, everybody leaves you be. It's live and let live. Except for the table and chairs. See? Take that guy over there. Across the street, you see him? Tall, lanky guy, curly hair. He's got the sign under his arm. What's that say? Bureau of Missing Persons? Lost Souls and Kindred Exes. Well, I have no idea what that's all about. Probably gonna go open a place next to the tarot card reader. Oh, the business community meetings are gonna get very interesting.
So where did the idea of the character, the proprietor of Monarch's Convenience, Rick, where did that, how did you shape that identity?
Well, through those first initial meetings, I was getting the impression that a lot of people and I think actually looking back and talking about this now, I had my expectations were wildly inaccurate for what was coming. And one of the things that I had expected was that we'd be telling a lot of really happy stories about the West End. And I wanted to have this kind of gruff, darker character that kind of represents some of the darker elements that exist in the community here. And what ended up happening was everyone brought some really dark material, and I ended up having to create an arc of redemption very quickly for my character so that he could be kind of a little bit more of a positive influence. that took me really off guard.
Yeah, well, it's interesting from what I can recall of the way the show developed. It's interesting that you started with those dimensions and how much, you know, as you say, Rick really played that redemptive role.
Yeah, he ended up becoming a father figure to one of the characters, and in a lot of ways, to a lot of the other characters, he kind of played that role too.
Yeah, well, literally, I believe. Bogus.
Yeah, I think he adopted Bogus, didn't he, by the end? So that was, yeah. Oh, hey, can I help you with something?
Hi. Is this coffee fair trade?
No. Gouging suppliers.
Is any of this stuff organic?
Slushy machine is green today. You gonna buy something?
Probably.
Yeah, well, don't think I'm not watching you.
Excuse me?
I have enough kids trying to rip me off every day without a new batch of shoplifters coming in here.
I could buy my slushie somewhere else, you know.
Nearest place is the gas station down the street.
Ugh, no thanks. Corporate jerks.
Who are you calling a jerk?
Not you, the gas station. Bunch of planet-raping capitalist pigs. It's big companies like that that are responsible for pushing consumerism to its current state. People on this continent have been trained to buy all kinds of crap that they don't need because it's cheap. And meanwhile, a single meal in some countries will cost you 2 days' wages. And the big corporations like it that way because they can get cheap goods from those countries because the people selling them are so desperate. Makes me sick. And it makes it harder on small, decent operations like this one. All the corporations care about is money.
You gonna pay for that slushy?
Yeah, I'm gonna move on to Kathy. Maybe you should just give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you know, this idea came to you and tweaked your interest.
For the character that I had?
Or even the overall production.
Well, at the time, Jason asked me, because we were in some theater classes together. I was a student here. I was taking theater classes. That was my major. And the character was very easy to come up with, because at the time, you know, I was still quite young, and I was very hung up on, like, stereotypes and what people saw when they saw me and, like, how I was represented, you know, in other people's minds. And I was very aware that I was this, like, person from the suburbs who now lived downtown and, you know, was a little bit of a hippie. And so I just took that to the absolute extreme. And I know that there's a lot of negative connotations with people like that, like the whole, you know, the kind of, what do you call them, virtue signaling hipster kind of, I'm going to recycle, but I don't actually care, you know, that, like, I just care what I look like, that kind of thing. So I basically made that kind of character. Actually, no, I think maybe the character did care a little bit, but she was very much just like, you know, she changed her name because her parents named her a very colonial name. And she was like, no, I'm changing my name to the name of a spice. And then, you know, and this whole story came out where she was actually the daughter of these, like, rich, these, like, the owners of the big box store, you know, multinational corporation. And she was the heiress to this fortune. But she was like, I don't want it. I, you know, so, yeah, it was that kind of, I think it was all coming out of my own, you know, worries about, like, oh, does everybody know what a poser I am? You know, because I, you know, I moved downtown because it was closer to school.
But, imposter syndrome.
Yeah, imposter syndrome, I guess. And so, but the character, I think, ended up being kind of funny. She did end up having some dark storylines, too. But mm-hmm. I think it was, like, I was trying to make fun of that kind of, like, and I was trying to, like, be aware of my own, you know, privilege and kind of put that into this character. And she learned a little bit, too, about those dynamics, I think, throughout the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting the way Cassia.
Yeah, that was her name, which I found out later is a real name. I just chose a random spice, but yeah. There are people who are named that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a. I mean, like the as we got more characters, I mean, we got. There was a romance that developed mm-hmm. between Cassia and. Jacob, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you, that just came out of a story meeting or do you?
I don't remember whose idea that was, but I remember I was super on board with it because it fit really well with my character, because Jacob was this, well, he was like, I think the idea was he was posing as a homeless person, and she was like, oh yeah, I want to date a homeless person because I'm so woke. Like, but then he was like, I really want to get with this girl, so I guess I better tell her I'm homeless. So that was kind of like a funny thing, I think. And he was, I remember there was a scene where he was just like dragging a mattress from his apartment where he lived with his aunt. Like, he was dragging this mattress to underneath the bridge so that he could be like, let me take you home to my bridge where I live on a mattress.
Oh, hey, my name's Jacob. Yeah, I live under a bridge. Why don't you swing by sometime? Jackass. Yeah, I sleep on a mattress. I sleep on a mattress I found in my aunt's house. Jackass. Oh, no one from the neighborhood is gonna notice the Dubek kid hauling a mattress 20 blocks. Clean getaway. Yep. Jackass. How does Marnie sleep on this anyway? Feels like it's full of wood. Oh. Oh. Dear God, it's Jacob Dubek. I have exactly $3.63 in my pocket. It's all yours. If you just make this work. And may I remind you, if you indulge me in not only this prayer, but also letting me wield executive power of a Fortune 500 company by the time I'm 25, your profits are guaranteed to multiply exponentially. I know you'll make the right decision. I will be done. Best wishes. Amen, Jacob. Oh. Hey, I know. I see you. I'm crossing as fast as I can. Just wait a minute, okay? Oh. Okay. Here goes nothing. How do I get under a bridge? They're exactly designed like that. Ugh. I guess I'll just gently slide the mattress down the slope. Easiest part of my day, real. Oh. Ugh. Crap. Maybe I can blow dry that out when I get home. Aunt Marnie's gonna stab me. Probably not, but she'll make me sleep on it. Have to lie on the blanket, I guess. Oh, man. What's that smell? It's like death and unhusked corn came together. Let's see what the damage is, shall we? One side of the bed actually looks kind of okay. Let's just move this baby a little closer to the water. Give it kind of a feng shui feel. Oh. Oh. Note to self. Drop that word in conversation. Okay, mattress. Check. Blanket. Check. Boombox with new batteries. Check. Oh, I better rub some dirt on that for realism's sake.
I know that with my character, Carl, I mean, he came in about 3 or 4 episodes in, and the play. Actually, I mean, you know, longtime listeners may not realize this. I mean, they know me principally as a news guy, but an interview guy. But my first role at CKUW was as that character.
That's right.
I just gotten my membership at CKW, and then I headed over to the production studio, and I saw Jason and Susie. She was playing the role of Ridley.
That's right.
Yeah, and so I said, well, okay. I was curious. I thought it's something for me to do, and so I jumped on board, and that's...
Maybe you should start worrying more about the people you piss off, and less about these so-called brown shirts.
Oh, you can't let people's ignorance hold you back. This is a war, and you've got to be prepared to fight back or be enslaved. It's freedom or it's tyranny. The chains are a choice.
Oh, I think that guy must have hit you pretty hard. Right in your head. Look, maybe I will call the cops.
No, don't do that.
Why not? I think you're pretty badly hurt. They'll send an ambulance, too.
Everything's cool. I just need to sit here a couple of minutes. It's not an issue, is it?
It's no issue, but I don't want you keeling over in my store.
Last thing I need to deal with is some jackbooted, taser-wielding brown shirt. Take me out on a midnight ride. You got another towel? This one's soaked.
No, and you can keep that one. Midnight ride. It's 8 a.m.
It'll be midnight before the cops are done with me.
Look, don't you have somewhere to be? Haven't you a job?
I did. You ever hear of a company called Tamax?
No. Am I going to?
Tamax specializes in software for surveillance technology, and I worked on timing applications that were being integrated with the new radio frequency identification chips.
Well, isn't that fascinating?
I could not in conscience collaborate with that agenda.
Uh-huh. Great. Enter the hippie.
Good afternoon.
I can take my insider knowledge and use it to educate the people so they know how they're being manipulated and controlled by powers that exist beyond all accountability.
Right on! What are we talking about?
We are talking about people who need to get jobs.
We're talking total information awareness. We're talking elite control.
Oh,
elite
man.
Manipulation of the money supply, food supply, and all the advantage of a few invisible tyrants who are pulling the puppet strings of our so-called elected government. Ow! Are you sure you don't have an ice pack or something around here?
That's it. I'm calling the cops.
Why? Because he's speaking his mind?
No, because he just got beat up.
Oh. Yeah, maybe you should.
No, really, I'm fine. Just, like, I gotta go anyway. Thanks for your help. But little advice, I got DVDs at home about the Illuminati.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I'll lend you, but you gotta wake up and realize there's a lot of crap going down.
And I came up with this kind of a, you know, a warped conspiracy theory dude that said, I mean, I, you know, it was sort of very much, you know, a lot of communications around that time. And I kind of absorbed it from a couple of people. I'm not going to say who they are, and I'm not saying that they're real people, but just a little bit of exaggeration.
Yeah.
No, but I'm probably the only person at this table that has no theater experience, so I was probably that template of you know, bringing the community involved. And
right.
I thought it was really cool to participate, and I was very interested in the way you know, this whole process of writing a character and then week by week, you know, working with others to develop stories. Sarah, how about you came on after me?
Yeah.
And you well, what do you remember of, first of all, how you got interested, and you know, some of the things you remember from those days about, you know, building a character and the challenges that went with it?
Sure. Well, at the time I had already finished my acting degree from U of W. But I've also, for a long time, I've been writing scripts. I've been writing scripts for quite a few years at that point. I was working on plays, some television scripts, and I was very interested in working as a writer on a television series, which is a pretty hard job to get, I imagine. And I just was never the kind of person to just stick my head out and be like, I want to be a professional TV writer. It just wasn't something I was able to get into, like, to be forceful or to be ambitious in that way. But when I saw an ad for this show at the Monarch's Convenience, I think it was in a newspaper. It might have been the Uniter, or it might have been one of the West End newspapers. I saw that as an opportunity to get involved in something similar. And I've always loved the idea of team writing. I love writing scenes with people. It's harder for me to write by myself. So I thought it would be fun to be part of story meetings. And also, because I had this interest in acting, I didn't mind the acting part at all either. So it was a great sort of blend. And it was super easy to get involved with. I think I just dropped you a line probably, Jason, and I was just told, come to our meetings. And I just started coming. It was a little challenging because I came in quite a bit later in the season. So I didn't know exactly what had happened before. So I was like trying to catch up and look at old episodes and stuff like that. And as far as my character, it's been 10 years now, so things are a little bit murky. But I remember there was a situation with Cassia and a baby. Mm-hmm. And let's just say it sort of led to some sort of controversial questions about, you know, what was it that happened, Kathy? Do you remember with the baby?
My character got a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think we were talking about stem cells.
Yeah. Something about like setting up a stem cell bank with like embryonic tissue. I think your mother was going to do that or something. Like I remember I was just looking through some old scripts today just to try to refresh my memory. And I came across the name Bonita.
Yeah. Belmont. Bonita Belmont.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonita Belmont. And so
CEO of Belmont.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think what happened to, you know, as you would, as a playwright would, you look at one character and they represent one point of view. And you need to find an antagonist for that person. Mm-hmm. So I came up with an antagonist for your character.
Hmm.
And she was a right-wing Christian radio talk show host named Darlene Deering. And she was against using, you know, fetuses for research. And she was lecturing about the sanctity of life. And I think she was upset with your lifestyle, maybe.
Probably.
Your relationship with Jacob. I think she wanted you guys to do the right thing.
Right.
Get married or something. She's
like, do you remember what her relationship was to the convenience store? Like, how did she interact with these?
I don't even know if she had a relationship with the convenience store. Like, I don't remember that part.
Right, because we started to spin off, too, where things were happening outside of the convenience store, I think, a lot more.
I think so, yeah. Because actually, you know what? There was a scene I just came across where she was around the convenience store, and I think she was bumming a cigarette from someone.
Hmm.
I don't know if it was Carl. I remember, okay, I just read she defended Carl.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think what happened was she came across a situation where Carl was being picked on as a person who has, I guess, more of a left-leaning orientation to things. It would have been pretty easy to create this kind of ridiculous sort of harpy kind of sort of crass and very, I don't know.
So you have some empathy with a character that you would normally distance yourself.
Yeah, like yeah. I also sort of have always had a fascination with Christians who are very devoted to their ideas about pro-life, and also just the ethos of, you know, trying to care about people even in a way that, you know, adheres to a very specific moral code. Mm-hmm. I liked that she had that specific moral code, but I also tried to give her some heart. Like she cared.
Which we did with her relationship with Carl, I think, brought that human element into what looks like a cardboard, I think, or an idea. We have an idea of somebody who's a right-wing radio host, and then giving them, finding that connection, that human connection that they have with the world around them, and exploring that.
Would you believe it? Give them a couple of lies and the people just run off. Oh, that Bonita Belmont. She's in league with the devil. Poor lost soul. Hey, can I have a pack of those camels? They're the only place in town that sells them.
Cigarettes? Okay. What type of camels will that be?
Why, I've got this terrible oral fixation. Have to fill my mouth right up.
Well, we've got soap over there.
I detect some impertinence from you, young man.
Oh, do you? Why are you here anyway? I know you didn't come for cigarettes. If this is you trying to get me to join your vigilante justice league again, you can forget it. You're not Mother Teresa, you know. You don't know what it's like to be in that situation. What it's like to be those parents. The mom's just barely of age. She got scared in a very scary situation that's scary for anyone. Now, you do what you want with your babies.
Jacob.
But it's her baby, and if she wants to give it to science, she can.
Jacob.
All she did to you was boost your ratings.
Jacob, the Lord's forgiven you for not joining our rally.
What?
You're forgiven, dear. I'm here on another mission.
What do you want? We haven't got all day.
Would you call your friend Carl over?
Carl?
Yes, I'd speak to you together.
Fine, if it'll get you out of here. Carl. Carl, the trash talk lady wants to talk to us.
Carl, dear.
Yeah?
Carl, you're a righteous hero.
What?
Your friend told me about your condition. I applaud your strength. It takes a great man to live with a mental illness. My brother's daughter has schizophrenia. She's had a hard life, but God's given her the grace, beauty, and intelligence to persevere through all the troubles and to come out whole.
Wait.
She's a great young woman. Now, your friend Jacob, I don't know what he's been reading or who he's been talking to, but he calls you crazy. He thinks your boss is some kind of sport for keeping you on. He thinks you can't hack it in the real world. If this isn't the real world, all the customers, the mean streets outside, I don't know what is. Jacob, if you apologize, your friend Carl might just forgive you. And what's more, the Lord forgives the truly repentant. Hate the sin, love the sinner. Now I'll take my cigarettes. How much?
$9.50.
There you go. Good day.
I bet. Carl, I can't deny I said all those things, but I really didn't mean it.
Didn't mean what things, Jacob? The things you said to Darlene today, or the things you said to me yesterday about being my friend?
Carl.
Do you have any idea how hard it was for me to agree to seek treatment, or how hard it was to return here?
I'm sorry.
I don't have many friends, Jacob. Except for my sister, my niece, and the people I've met here at Monarchs, I don't have anybody. At least with someone like Darlene, I know where I stand. But I have to go. I have no room in my life for false friends.
Carl, I'm sorry about what I said. I like you. Can't we just forget this? Hey, Carl. Carl!
There's a human connection I want to explore a little bit more. Of course, the character Bogus was played by a young woman who sadly is no longer with us.
Yeah, she passed away.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. That he ended up like becoming, it seemed to me, very much kind of like the heart of the show. I don't know if you...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole relationship with Rick, that was like the A story, I think, of the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the way that we had set it up with him being that central character, and there's also very specific reasons for that, because these were all volunteer positions. You never knew who was going to show up week to week. So, except I was, because I had a grant, and I was being paid to do this, so I was going to be here every week. So it made it very... it made it convenient to be Rick is going to be in every episode because we know he's going to be here, and to kind of build around that. And whoever showed up, and we would write based on that. So I think that's part of why he just kind of became the heart, because he was there all the time, and we always knew we could count on Rick being there, and whoever showed up was going to have an interaction with him. And once I realized he can't continue being the antagonist for everybody, he had to evolve, and Bogus was also there most of the time.
Remember, the forks go on the left, knife and spoons on the right.
Why? What's the point?
I don't know, they just do. Bogus, hand me that box of spaghetti, would you? The water's boiling and I have to keep the sauce stirring.
Here, Rick. Smells good. What did you put in the sauce? My mom just buys cans of spaghetti. Sometimes she doesn't even heat it up, but it's still good.
Well, Bogus, I make my own. I even grew these tomatoes on that window ledge right over there. That other stuff? It's not good.
You sell it in your store.
People want to buy it. There's nothing wrong with that. Different strokes and all.
Well, I like the way yours smells, and looks really good.
Hey, watch yourself. You don't get too close to the stove.
Don't worry.
Who's worried?
Yeah.
Bogus, look, I want to talk to you about something. You, remember when I said it doesn't matter if you're my son or not?
Yeah. I don't know what you meant by that. It matters to me.
Yeah, well, I guess it matters to me too, but, you know, I guess I don't have to be your dad to take care of you.
What?
Well, I just don't... I don't want you to be getting your hopes up, and, you know, you can stay here as long as you like.
I can live here?
If that's what you want, you don't have a place to stay, and it's better than you living in Ridley's office.
Really, Rick? I love you!
Whoa! I'm trying to stir the sauce here, Bogus.
Sorry, Rick. Oh, or... Yeah, Rick.
Plus, we still have to talk to your mom. Let her know you're safe. I don't even know where she is.
I can go down there tomorrow and see if she's home. I can ask her if I could live here, too.
Yeah, you should do that, Bogus.
Yes!
Well, we still don't know what the test results are, but like I said, it doesn't matter.
Well, I'll ask my mom if she's home.
Okay. Supper's ready. You go wash your hands and I'll get the garlic bread ready.
What's garlic bread? I don't know if I like that.
Everybody likes garlic bread. Trust me.
Okay. I'm gonna live at Rick's house.
And hey, make sure you use soap.
Soap? What's soap?
What?
Just joking. I know what soap is.
Wise guy. Oh, that little booger.
So, when it was, sometimes there would just be three of us. There'd be Bogus and Ridley and Rick in the room, and we would have to write 25 minutes of material and in 2 days. And perform it and record it in an afternoon. So when you had a couple of episodes like that, and you have to develop these relationships, otherwise you run out of material pretty quick. So I think that's where that was born out of necessity, really.
Yeah. Should maybe talk about, touch on a couple of the other hallmark characters that were part of our weird little family. Of course, you just mentioned Ridley, played by Susie Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
So what specific dimension do you think she added to the mix?
Well, you know, I used to see her around the neighborhood, and I don't see her anymore. I haven't seen her for a long time, so I don't know what happened to her.
She was not a theater student.
No. And she was just this really kind of gruff personality that she brought the sand to the project that I thought Rick was going to have to bring. And she was just so tough, and her character was so tough. I think she, I have to think
kind
about
like
that
a
little bit.
Gumshoe kind of.
Yeah, that's right. She was
the
private eye.
Yeah.
The, the self-made private eye.
Yeah.
Afternoon, Sir Rick.
Oh, Ridley. Come on in, Ridley. What can I get for you?
What can you get for me? A secretary, I was hoping. I was hoping that one of those people who comes into your store would happen to be a secretary, would happen to see the sign, and I might happen to get some information back.
Information? You're a strange duck, Ridley. But I guess you don't need that sign anymore, eh?
Oh, there's an expiry date on the signs around here?
I don't know. Didn't you hire that bogus?
I don't do child labor.
It's too bad. Look at the good job you did on this floor.
Who did?
Bogus. Mop this floor.
You got Bogus to mop your floor? Child labor laws, you know. You don't go hiring kids.
It was that or let him starve. What do you prefer?
What, are you feeding him the dirty water after he mopped the floor?
No, I paid him.
I hate to think what you paid him with.
Bag of chips.
Bag of chips, eh? That's it?
Yeah, I should have given him a sandwich.
You should have.
Here, why don't you take him one?
What am I, Mother Teresa? I mean, don't get me wrong. I care about the kid. I do. But, you know, I do have things to do. I am looking for people, in particular his mother.
His mother?
His mother, yeah.
He was just in here today telling me his mother's sleeping. Or sick or something.
His mother is missing.
That's what he needed a big bag of chips for, to share with his mom.
He's scamming you.
Or you.
Or me. His mother is missing. I have it written down. He attested to it. I believe him.
Well, maybe you should start searching for her at his home.
Yeah, so... yeah, she brought this heart of trying to always be doing the right thing and...
wholesome vigilantism.
Wholesome vigilantism, yeah. Yeah, that kind of forced everybody to smarten up a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Of course, I remember another person, also a later entry, Sam, who played this character, who went by the wonderful name Robert Manchild. And, I do remember at one point he was kind of doing his little writing thing, and he had this sort of goofy voice. And
yeah, he was a master of voices.
Yeah, he really is.
I saw with my own eyes that kid Bogus get hauled off by the cops while a bunch of young pyromaniacs, practically with a lit match it's still in their hand, stood by and laughed.
That's funny.
The world's not a safe place, Robert. That's why it's so important that people who are on the same page work together.
Yeah.
Share ideas.
Yeah, ideas, right.
Robert, I just want you to know that I really appreciate you agreeing to come and spend time with me. I don't think I've been to Festival de Voyageurs since my painting days.
Yeah, painting at the festival, that's great.
And you know what else? It really meant a lot to me that you came to visit me in the hospital.
Oh, sure.
I think you visited me more often than Sarah. Your true friend, Robert, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah, forget Sarah, right on.
Hey, Robert, are you okay?
Huh?
You seem a little different today. You're distracted. I think the feds may be aiming microwaves at your brain or something.
What? Oh, I'm sorry, Carl. It's just that I've been depressed over Cheryl is all.
Cheryl? Oh, your love interest?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you'll find someone else to replace her.
Well, I'm not looking to replace her, though. I mean, I can't stop thinking about Cheryl. Miss Prescott. I totally messed everything up with her. At first, I didn't want anything to do with her kids, and then I wanted too much to do with
Robert,
her kids. I mean,
you've got to get over her. While you're pining over Prescott, you're missing out on some real opportunities. There's so much more to life than these overhyped love affairs.
Like what? I can't think of anything I wouldn't trade for 10 more minutes with my beautiful green-eyed goddess.
Oh, nonsense. The time you've been wasting on a doomed romance, you could have been helping to build and design fallout shelters.
Oh, yeah.
Decipher hermetic runes. Train in hand-to-hand combat for the time when we'll be forced to defend ourselves from the brown shirts.
Or the hockey dads.
Robert, you need a hobby. That's what one of the nurses told me when I was in the hospital. You're not of any use to anyone, unless you can bring some balance to your life. You know, I think...
I miss her so much. Everything around me reminds me of her. The sun shining its tender rays down on the earthbound children. That green Chevy in the handicapped parking space reminds me of her lovely eyes. Even that ice sculpture over there, it reminds me of her face.
What? That ice sculpture?
Yeah.
The one that looks like a constipated bear with hemorrhoids?
Well, it was the last face she made when she last saw me, so it doesn't remind me of the good times, but at least I remember her face.
Hi, yes, my name is Sam McClain. I'm playing the voice of the narrator and a few others here in the Commando show here during Fringe. But back in the day, working with Monarch's Convenience, I was the voice of Robert and as well the villain William, or Will. Yes, William was the one.
Rick, your store only remains open at my good graces, and should I choose at any point, you will be completely out of a job and never able to recover.
Oh, what? Crap.
And Ridley, the detective wonder, your license has gone a little overlooked recently, and I can have quite the inspective eye when I need.
You leave them alone, William.
Oh, bogus. I know exactly where you should be right now. Your foster parents miss you, and I can assure you that if you do not learn to watch your tongue, you'll be right back with them in a moment's notice.
Rick, he can't do that.
I can do whatever I wish with the coming union that I am forming. And because you have all chosen to exempt yourselves from it, you have no choice but to be my enemies.
Fascist! Wait.
I'm Carl.
I'll have you barred from the streets, I'll have your families evicted, and I'll have your stores burnt to the ground.
I think he's delusional.
You can't do that.
Jeez, Carl thinks the Illuminati are out to get him. You should see this guy.
I'm telling him.
I've chosen also to cancel your book, Robert.
Oh. Wait a... That's low.
What?
William. You've betrayed everyone in this neighborhood.
And I will bring them together in my name, and there's nothing you can do. Go ahead, try and put any kind of charge towards me, and watch what my influence will be able to do to you.
Get out, William.
With pleasure.
Get!
Stay out!
This is not cool.
Can you believe that guy?
What a jerk!
I guess I don't need to keep writing this down anymore.
The turncoat is turned against.
Hey, I never knew what he was up to. I just thought he wanted to see my work. I mean, the guy comes, he offers me a job writing something, and suddenly everybody's turned against me when I just thought I was making some friends. Oh, God, no book.
You crybaby.
Hey,
look,
The voice that I did first was the voice of Robert, which has a funny story because it used to be a voice I would use to prank phone call pizza restaurants. I had a habit when I would call in an order for delivery, intending fully to receive it, that I would say, oh, hi there, I'd like to order a pizza. And I would just choose certain words to mispronounce just enough to see that they wouldn't hang up on me, like spinach instead of spinach, or feta instead of feta cheese, or anything like that. And, from there, that character just kind of made its way to the Monarch's Convenience of this strange discombobulated poet who had nowhere else to really go. So that was kind of the nature of the show, as people just gravitated to the center of the convenience store, and it really spoke to kind of the character of the West End in Winnipeg, too. It's like everybody's some kind of oddball, but they all somehow managed to make it work.
So do you have any favorite memories or moments from producing the film, if it was a scene or even something behind the scenes that still lingers in your memory all these years later?
I remember when we went down to Central Park, that park that's just off of Ellis, and we sat down and did outdoor recording. There was a couple of places where we went actually and took a recording set up with us, including in a real convenience store. We went to a 7-Eleven and recorded there as well. But the park was a cool one because it was a very active community moving around us, but everyone was mindful not to interrupt, which was really awesome, because how often, if you've ever worked on an outdoor film project or anything like that, do people want to come along and bug you or get involved themselves? But there was this, even though there were actively kids playing and stuff in the park, everyone was like, well, we'll just leave them be, which was great.
So if here after 40 episodes, it kind of came to a close, but I was wondering if you could maybe fill us in where the path your life has taken, and maybe the role that that Monarchs may have played in that process.
Yeah, I think after we finished working with Monarchs, it wasn't very long after that I finished my bachelor's at the university, and then from there, even now doing this Fringe show with Kathy, another member of Monarch's Convenience, I'm still finding opportunities to work on radio and in this creative writing process like this, and doing improvised shows as well. I've been a longstanding member of the Dungeons & Dragons improv show here in Winnipeg Fringe, and it has a kind of very similar flow to it, where there's a general idea from a narrator, but the cast themselves are mostly just improvising on the fly with what they think they need to do. So it definitely made me a better performer, I think, and gave me more of a sense of what it takes to actually record audio. Because it's one thing to do a live show in front of an audience, but to have to do it into a microphone and be audible is a whole other thing. So,
and I can't help but point out that the show that I've just seen that's playing here at Venue 11 is a radio play, and it's been... you know, you certainly do a lot of sort of the same sort of thing. It wasn't live the way we did it, but it's certainly the same kind of atmosphere. So is that anything that you pulled from your experiences that you're using at this play?
Oh, very much so. I can't help but cycle through some old voices and things, too. With needing to play more than one person, the William voice I would do is kind of like my normal speaking voice, but a little more sinister, I remember. And that is almost the voice that I'm doing for the narrator for this evening, because I know that it has a certain emotional effect to talk this way. And, radio plays will always have a special place in my heart because of that experience.
Sam, thanks very much, and thanks for sharing. Thanks for the performance, and maybe we'll see you again around CKUW for another kick at the cat, perhaps.
I would love that. Thanks very much for coming, and it's just great to be remembering all the good times back at the Monarch's Convenience.
So, coming to, I guess, maybe starting to close a little bit, I wonder if maybe just going around the table, everybody would like to say, you know, how this affected the, you know, sort of the trajectory of your respective careers, you know, how, you know, what you've learned from it, what how it's shaped your own creative endeavors. Sarah, do you have any thoughts? Or
well, it certainly got me involved with radio for one of the first times, and the station. I don't know if I'd been involved with the station before that. I don't remember that. And I never really did get to do another sort of... Well, actually, that's not true. We did do a later radio drama. It fed into that. Like, remember a few years ago, there was a drama that we did. Michael...
That's right.
And me and Julian, April...
Yeah, it was like the Christmas thing.
Yeah, it was a Christmas. It was called a Christmas coronary. And it was with... who was the star?
Marie LeBlanc.
And it was about a woman who's... who's very upset at Christmas because she has to get these special presents for her children, and they're gonna be very angry if she doesn't get the exact right video game console, and she gives the clerk a hard time, and then she gets so stressed out she gives herself a heart attack, and she goes up to heaven, and Michael is God, nice. And he tells her it's not her time yet, and she comes back to Earth. It's almost like you know, like what is that? The Dickens story where he wakes up and he's happy.
Yeah, Christmas Carol, yeah.
He's not a Grinch anymore.
Except this would be about explaining to her that she needs to be a bit more Grinchy.
Well,
she's so
maybe.
Stressed out trying to please everyone.
Yeah, I mean, you could read it that way, but I read it as she's kind of nasty and she learns to be nice to people.
Okay.
And to realize it's about family, it's not about consumerism. So basically, because I was involved with the Monarch's Convenience, is the first time I met Michael. And after that point, I also started getting involved with some of the, like, I guess it would be other types of spoken word, specifically producing pieces for the news. So I got involved with people of interest. As far as my theatrical career or whatever, I still continue to write scripts and all that. And it would have been cool if this could have led to a little more of this kind of group mm-hmm. projects. I actually think it's sort of too bad that we didn't, you know, pick it up again a few years later.
I was really sad when it ended.
Do something else. Yeah.
It was tough when it ended, but it also had to come to an end. And for me, I just had put so much time and energy into it. You know, those Tuesday meetings, which were story idea meetings, and then we would go away and write, and then Friday afternoons we would meet and do the recording, and then I would spend all weekend editing to get it on air for Monday and then start again on Tuesday. That was really grueling, and I think I had 2 or 3 part-time jobs at the time while I was going to school. So it was when it ended, I was exhausted.
And there's a big vacuum in your life, and
which I really appreciated for a little while. But and I think I just kind of burned out a little bit on it. Mm-hmm. And I thought a couple of years later, if I was going to do it again, would not do that grind of trying to get 40 episodes out in a year.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Kathy, how has this play affected your own?
I think it really helped me grow as a writer. Obviously, it was 10 years ago, so I was like 24. So, you know, I was learning how to be a writer. I was learning how to be a thespian at the time. And I think it was a really great practice to have to do that like almost every week. I know I wasn't there every week because there was kind of a rotating thing and we all had school, but I think I was there from a good chunk of it. And just having to write scripts and learning different ways to come at writing. You know, we kind of did a thing where it was like it was like D&D style. Everyone think up your character and then come to the table and then the story happens. And I learned about writing relationships. I think when I started, I was like again, I told you, I was very kind of obsessed with like, this character needs to be a way for me to tell everyone that I know what I am. And it's not, you know, I'm totally self-aware. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, this can also be about relationships and just being a human in the world.
Just before we close, Kathy, you've got a Fringe play that's
When does this air?
This will air on Friday the 26th.
Okay, so
I think there's at least one performance.
At that point, there will be, I think, one performance left. I'm in 2 shows. One of them is a radio show. It's a radio play. It's the movie Commando, but as a radio play.
Oh, cool.
So from 1985 with Arnold Schwarzenegger. We've got 3 voice actors. One of them is Sam McClain, who was here. And then the whole thing is put together by Corey Falvo, who's just been kind of like the Jason of this project. And then there's myself and Will O'Donnell, who plays Arnold. It's really neat. It's like, you know, all the fight scenes and the celery breaking, because it's live Foley on stage. So we all do the characters, and then Corey is there just like smashing watermelons and, you know, clanging on things.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's really fun. It's an hour-long version of Commando.
Okay.
And then the other play I'm in is called Tickling the Dragon's Tail. That's just a straight-up two-hander kind of stage play about World War II and a scientist who's working on the bomb and his imaginary friend who comes back to ask him why he's making a bomb.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Commando and
Tickling the Dragon's Tail.
Okay, yeah, check it out. All right, so Sarah Aronson, Kathy Herbert, Jason Hooper, it's been delightful to have you back in the station again.
Yeah.
And, go take this trip down Amnesia Lane with you.
Yeah. It's fun catching up.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, take care. You just heard our retrospective on At the Monarch's Convenience, a CKUW radio drama which ran for 40 episodes in 2008 and early 2009. Next week, we'll be taking a look at and having a listen from one of CKUW's most iconic spoken word programs, the anarchist show known as Black Mask. We hope you'll join us for that. You've been listening to CKUW Spoken Word Classics on CKUW 95.9 FM, heard every Friday at 1 p.m. over the summer months. If you wish to send feedback on this or any of the other shows we've been airing, send an email to Program Director Sam Doucette at programming@ckuw.ca or leave a voicemail message at 204-786-9782. This is Michael Welch signing off. We hope you'll join us again in 7 days. Thanks for tuning in.